Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Hello and welcome to Outpost as it is freshly delivered. We are so excited to be here. I'm just one of the hosts, Matthew Rushing, and I am excited to be joined, as always, by the effervescent, ever-talented Dre Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
Why, hello. How are you?
I'm good. It's really hot and muggy here.
Fantastic.
Usually we'll get a little rain and it'll kind of teeter out and won't be so muggy anymore, but for whatever reason it's hanging tight, so it's been an interesting summer here. I just want to give everyone our, like, you know, our weekly weather update.
Yeah,
because I know that's what they come here for.
It's true
weather.
I mean, they're not really here for anything else, although our new review on Apple Podcasts might beg to differ. They said I heart this, 5 stars. They said I love this, I started it today and I have been listening to it for hours.
Aw,
that's
feel
awesome
bad for you.
I mean, yeah, thank you for putting up with us for hours. So, yeah, that means so much to us. It really does. And the fact that, you know, you have been listening and finding it now, it means a lot. And it's kind of neat to see people continually find the show. And thank you for your review. Follow their lead. Give us a star rating and review over there on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whichever app you're on. It really does help. But you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, where you should be following us. Like us over on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And you can also find us on the website at thenerdparty.com, where that is a great place to check out everything we're doing. And if you wanted to send us an email, you can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owlpost, and then that email comes to Drea and I. So it is the big chapter. It's finally happened. The Yule Ball, chapter 23. We are here, and I really enjoyed this chapter, mainly because there's just a lot that happens in it, but it's so different from the rest of any of the other Christmases we had. Obviously, we have the Yule Ball, but this one is just busier. It's more vibrant. The castle, everybody is there because nobody's really left because they all want to be there. And I just kind of really enjoy that. Although, the chapter does start on somewhat of a downer because Fëanor is just complaining at all times about everything having to do with Hogwarts. Mainly about how the food is so rich and, she's apparently gaining a lot of weight.
I know, and I love that Hermione just is not having any of it. She's just rolling her eyes and redirecting the conversation. And, you know, when we get another one of our favorite, and I say that sarcastically, characters here at the very beginning of this chapter too, we get a nice little insult.
Yeah, I was about to say, what'd we say, favorite? Yeah.
Sarcastically.
Yeah, sarcastic pants put on firmly.
Our favorite Hogwarts student to hate, we get a Malfoy visit here at the beginning of the chapter too, But I love how Hermione sort of dupes him.
Yes.
It's probably my favorite moment in the chapter.
It's amazing.
He insults her, and then she's like, oh, hello, Professor Moody. And he flips out and turns around, and he's not there.
Well, and then her quip at the end is just fantastic, because she's like, twitchy little ferret, aren't you, Malfoy? And so her and the boys are walking up the stairs, dying laughing. Just dying laughing
at
they
should.
Yes,
they should.
Because this is such a funny line, and he deserves it. Like, he totally deserves it. He's just a little turd. And so I absolutely adore the fact that she zinged him so good. As my friend John Mills would say over on Aggressive Negotiations, she really, she must have ordered that from the Zinger Factory, because that was a good one.
I like it.
Yeah. And, you know, they are, at the same time, they notice something a little bit different about Hermione. She seems, let's just say her smile is different than they've ever seen it.
Yeah, she gets her teeth shrunk and, like, straightened. after the whole incident where she is caught in the middle of their duel and she gets hit in the face. She has, you know, she gets her teeth shrunk by Madame Pomfrey, and now she has somewhat of like a regular smile. And it's so funny because, you know, you forget and she reminds you that her parents were dentists, mm-hmm. and that they're going to be upset because they don't really feel like magic right. is a good way to fix dental issues. but it's just an interesting little quip of something that is happening. She's gaining a little confidence, and it'll, and I think we'll find out later in this chapter maybe a little bit of why she wanted that done.
Yes, and I really like that. I love that. What's interesting too is that you notice that after the conversation about the boys, you know, and at least Ron specifically being like, "Oh, you're a girl," they're starting to notice them some things about Hermione. Now they're actually seeing her in a slightly different light, and so the fact that they notice the fact that she has different teeth, has a different smile, I think is really. It's kind of cute, you know, like it's like, oh, they're, you know, starting to see their friends a little bit differently, especially Ron, which as we will see throughout this entire chapter, he's still trying to get her to tell him who she's going with to the ball, and she won't do it.
I love that he keeps just like randomly interjecting it, hoping to catch her off guard. Oh, look, the male's here. Who are you going to the ball with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I think it's hilarious. And she just is like, nope, not telling you. Nope, not going to work.
Well, in the same moment, or at the same time, they get back to the common room and Ron's owl is back and the letter from Sirius has come. And he congratulates him on such a great job being done with the dragon. But he also reminds him to basically the same thing that Moody always says, which is constant vigilance and don't get complacent, which I love because that's kind of what Hermione's been saying too. And yeah. And she even tries to get him like, shouldn't you be like looking into that egg? And he's like, Hermione, how am I gonna even hear the egg in the first place with all this noise? And she's like, yeah, you're right. You know, like there's a moment there that I just thought was so funny where Hermione's like, yeah, I guess, I mean, yeah, you got a point. So
fine, I guess you're right. We can take a break because it's Christmas.
Yeah, it
it's just
is
like
really
a little
cute.
Defeatist approach.
Well, you know, I there's that, but I also, you know, Hermione's not, she's not insane, right? Like she gets that there are times when things could work best, and a super busy common room at Christmas time, probably not the best time to try and figure out the egg. You know, Harry's got a point.
Yeah.
So I just kind of like that. And I love that, you know, they start playing chess and Hermione just kind of sits there and watches them. You can imagine she's just reading a book or whatever. And it's just they're comfortable. They're back to all being friends. And I think it's a really kind of cute little scene. You know, and I wonder if Hermione's not kind of feeling good about herself at this moment when the boys just noticed that she's got a new smile and they kind of complimented her on it. And, you know, maybe she's just feeling a little less, quote unquote, Hermione-ish, you know, at this exact time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, she's just happy that things are back to normal. And, you know, it's nice to get confident, to be confident and have like a spring in her step. And
yeah.
I feel like she's maybe thinking a little bit about not thinking about tomorrow, right? She's excited, but also kind of doesn't want to know what that's going to be like. And she knows that the answer to Ron's question will come out. And, you know, I think she's just like living in the moment. She doesn't want to make it more difficult or awkward than it mm-hmm. already is. So she's just going to be happy that, like, it is the way it is now. So... Mm-hmm. I'm kind of just taking it as she's living in the moment. She doesn't want to push it too much because I have a feeling that, you know, we'll come to find out that there's a reason for that here mm-hmm. very shortly.
Yeah.
And I love how we start Christmas morning tomorrow and how Harry gets woken up on Christmas Day, right? Because usually he's there, and I think Ron's been there most years now too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's unusual to have a lot of kids there, but he wakes up, and I love the way she describes it, to a pair of little green eyes.
Yeah, the fact that he wakes up to Dobby right in his face and just like almost freaks out, and he's like, dude, I don't care if you wake me up, but just, you know, just like poke me next time. Just give me a nudge, you know, don't get in my face. And Dobby's all like, oh, I'm so sorry. And Harry's like,
he says like, oh, you know, Harry says that I could visit. And he goes, yeah, but you got to like, let me know next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I love that Seamus is like, are you under attack, Harry? And he's like, no, I'm good. And he's like, yes. Okay.
Yes. I think it's really cute. And then they have this whole little scene where, you know, they have Christmas together. And I love that he didn't really get anything for Dobby, but Dobby gave him socks. And so he's like, oh, well, hold on one second. And he's like looking through his trunk and finds his like nastiest socks from Uncle Vernon and gives him those. And Dobby's like, oh, I love socks. And then Ron's like, oh, well, here, you can have some of these too. And then Dobby just starts praising Ron, which I thought was hilarious. Like how kind and how great of a wizard he must be. If he's Harry Potter's best friend, so he's so generous of spirit and noble. And Ron's like, they're just socks, dude.
Yep. It's funny.
It is really funny. So I enjoy that. And they have a great Christmas day together. They get to play outside in the snow, and
I really like that this is such a moment, and this is again where we were talking a little bit about the boys realizing that Hermione is a girl.
Yep.
You know, she says, oh, I'm not going to participate because I have to go upstairs and start getting ready. And I think it's Harry, or I think
Ron
it's Harry
goes,
who asks, like,
he's like,
Ron goes, you need 3 hours to get ready. And if you're a girl getting ready for like a prom or a dance or something like that, you know absolutely that 3 hours is probably an appropriate amount of time you're going to spend between taking a shower and doing your hair and doing your makeup and like being indecisive about things, and like you just need that time, and it takes, you know, a couple hours, and it's one of those moments where I think they're realizing like, oh, okay, so she's different than us, got it, because they go upstairs in like 15-20 minutes, put on a different set of robes and call it a day, and that's all they have to do to get ready, you know. So I think it's funny.
I think it's fantastic, and I love how little time it takes the boys to get ready. And then Ron is just not happy with this awful set of dress robes that he's got. And I love that they even, like, they use the severing charm to take off all the lace. So at least it doesn't have lace, but it doesn't work great. And my favorite, though, is them walking downstairs and Dean's like, I still can't work out how you two got some of the best looking girls of the year. And Ron's reply is just so classic Ron. He's like, animal magnetism. And it's just like, right.
Dude, you
right.
didn't even ask him.
Nope. He didn't have anything to do with that. It's just fantastic. So
funny.
It is really funny. And I love that this whole time, even when, you know, he's meeting Parvati's sister, Padma, and everything, you know, those girls look great. You know, Rowling does a great job of talking about, you know, how nice all the girls are looking. And Ron's only question for everybody is, where's Hermione? Where's Hermione? Where's Hermione? It's like he's
just
a broken
desperate
record.
To find out who she's, or who she's going with, you know? So we get downstairs and, you know, everyone's all dressed up and standing around. And it's very different from the movie, because in the movie, they all sort of enter and the dance starts immediately. Yep. Where here it's a little more formal. You know, you have Ludo Bagman there. We find that Percy's there representing Mr. Crouch, which we'll learn more about later in the ball. And they come to like a very formal feast with a menu. And I love how they order, though, that they just talk to their plate and what they order shows up. And you find, you know, you're listening to Floor sort of wooing or using her charm over one of the Quidditch captains, and I think the Hufflepuff Quidditch captain.
Yes.
Is that right?
Roger Davies, yeah.
And you know, and we find out that Hermione's date to the Yule Ball is Victor Crumb, which is not different from the movie, but in the book it's a big surprise. And that no one recognizes her at first. You know, Harry's going through and he's like, well, there's Cho and Cedric, there's Flora and Roger Davies, then there's Crumb and his date who I don't recognize. And then as he gets closer, he sees that that's Hermione and she looks totally different. Her hair is all sleek and nicely put up and, you know, she's got these robes and this very like pastel-like color that she doesn't normally wear. And she's sort of just... I love that he's like, she's standing there confidently, which is probably because she doesn't have her 12 pounds of books like she normally has on her. You know, he's just a very different side of her. And he's just like, what just happened? And, you know, everyone kind of stares at her. And then I love that it's like Ron walks by and doesn't even notice. Doesn't even notice that it's Hermione. It's like, that's the only person you've been looking for. And it's the one person you don't recognize. I thought it was really, it was hilarious.
No, I 100% agree with you. And I actually think this is done so much better than the movie. Because they make such a huge deal of the fact that Hermione has straightened her hair and that she has it like all twisted so that one, that she does look completely different. Because normally she kind of has this, you know, you almost kind of get the picture in the series throughout the books that it's almost like this permanently permed mess, you know, that she's got, that she has trouble taming. And she has obviously done a lot of work this night to make her hair look like something you've never seen before. But also she's wearing this beautiful lavender dress. And so you get
every girl who's read this chapter here is rolling her eyes and going, it's not lavender, it's periwinkle.
Oh, excuse me, periwinkle. I'm sorry. But the thing that I think is fascinating here is that everybody is looking Hermione kind of incredulously, like, what? Like, that's Hermione? Like, all of a sudden, everybody's like, damn, girl hot. Girl's hot. You know, like they can't believe it. Like nobody can believe it.
I'm so offended by this conversation.
I know, but that's what I think is so interesting in the book, because that's like even the girls in the book are looking at Hermione like that, like, and they kind of hate her for it. And it's
oh yeah.
I don't. It
she gets nasty yes, from his little yes. tribe that always followed him around.
Exactly. And so, but it's. What I love about the way she writes it personally is that I think everybody who is a guy has had that moment where a friend of yours shows up at a party or maybe, you know, you go to a wedding or whatever and you see that person you haven't seen in a long time or whatever. And there's just like something completely different. And they're like, wow, that's the moment that everybody's having with Hermione at this point. And so I think she does such a great job of, she does a really great job of writing this, because I'll be honest, I've had that moment where you just see a friend in a whole new light and you're like, dang.
I do feel like that's relatable for a lot of people, but I'm not a big fan of her transformation being so superficial here. I mean, she's got this new confidence and, you know, I think that comes out a little bit near the end of the chapter when we start hearing Ron and Hermione talk about her date. But I don't know, like the whole, I call it the she's all that factor, where if you take somebody who's, you know, frizzy haired and in glasses and blah, 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 and put them in a nice dress and smooth their hair, like that doesn't change who they are. And that doesn't make them right. more valuable. You know, so I don't really like that. I feel like it's relatable from a teenage standpoint, and I'm kind of giving it to that. But I think that I'm hoping, and if I'm remembering correctly, we get to see more of her flourish into herself, and that, you know, her change in appearance translates to a change of confidence and a change in her attitude and approach and things, which I am all for that. And I'm all for that growth. And that's not to say everyone should have to, like, you know, stay ugly or whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm not trying to say that, but I'm saying the focus should be on more than just her physical transformation. And I feel like this chapter is like all about her physical transformation. So I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt that we'll get to that coming up soon. But not a huge fan of the focus on that physical transformation, because, you know, and in the movie, she totally totally like in the movie, this definitely plays to my advantage in that she sort of has a bounce back almost. But we'll see if that translates to the book. And it's just a matter of, you know, we're reading this chapter by chapter, and she can't fit all of that into one chapter. So I'm really hoping we see more of a development in her take ownership of, you know, like, people shouldn't just be paying attention to her now that she's hot or whatever, you know, like, that doesn't matter. So I'll be interested to see how that translates. But it's probably my least favorite part of this chapter is the focus on that, like, physical transformation. And I get why we did it, and I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just saying it's not my favorite. Not my favorite, people. Anyone who's listened to this podcast should not be surprised.
Yeah, I would say I didn't see it that way, and mainly because what you were kind of wanting, I felt like she was already doing in the chapter. I feel like Hermione has a lot more confidence in this chapter from the very beginning, like when she slams Malfoy. That's something a more confident Hermione does, you know, and it has nothing to do with her looks changing. She hasn't changed her looks at that point, you know. The only thing she changed was her teeth, and that was because Malfoy, you know, made them bigger, and she just took the opportunity to finally make them a size she was pleased with. But, you know, other than that, nothing else had changed about her. Her appearance was the same. When she talks about when Crumb asked her, it was all of those nights in the library where he was apparently coming to try and just ask her out, but he couldn't get up the nerve, so he just kept not doing it, which was kind of cute too, because I think many a boy has done that. And so,
girl,
you know, I felt like, you know, the message here, it didn't seem as mixed to me, because Hermione gets asked out by Crumb because of who she is before there's any transformation.
Totally on board with that. So, 100% supportive of that. I'm more speaking to the overall response to her when she shows up at the ball. Like, yeah, you want to put your best foot forward, and right, it's always great to be like, you look great. But I feel like that overall transformation was a little overplayed for my taste.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get that. So, and I think the way, at least the way that Rowling does it, she does it in a way where, I don't know, it is seen as being kind of nasty, you know, from a lot of the people, you know, it just being unkind, you know, towards her, which I, you know, I kind of like, it's like, as well, it's not as though people all of a sudden just like Hermione now because they think she's hot. It's just like there's all these girls that are just like, you know, like looking at her meanly and everything. And it just, I don't know, she does a great job of making it very high school. Like, it feels very true to what high school was actually like.
Sure.
Which is very frustrating. So, but I think the thing that is also really interesting is that there are tons of people at this ball. You know, you've got Percy's there because Mr. Crouch has apparently been very ill since the World Cup.
It sounds like exhaustion, yes, is how he kind of explains, mm-hmm, it, you know. The loss of the house elf, and then the tournament, and all the stuff, yep, that was the fallout from the World Cup. And I love how he talks about that Rita Skeeter lady buzzing around. You know, she's adding stress for everyone. So,
yeah, I kind of just loved the annoyance of Percy this whole chapter. Like, he's just,
I know.
Yeah.
I really like though that Harry's like, I debated whether asking him if Mr. Crouch is still calling him Weatherby, but he opted not to.
That was awesome. That was awesome. And then you've got, you know, when they're sitting down to dinner, I love the conversation that Hermione and Crumb are having about, you know, their castle and everything, and how Karkaroff is like, no, if you need to tell her, you know, that much about that. And Dumbledore's like, it's fine. You don't need to have so much secrecy. And it just cracks me up, you know, because Karkaroff comes back and he's like, we're very protective of our, you know, castle and learning our secrets. And Dumbledore's response, maybe one of the best responses ever. And it does bring up something that will be used later on. And I love the fact that she does it in such a flippant way, which is, Dumbledore saying, I don't even pretend to know everything about Hogwarts. Like, just the other night, I had to go to the bathroom really late, and I found a room that was beautifully supplied with chamber pots. And I went back to try and find that room, and it was gone. I don't know when it comes, and I don't know where it goes, and I don't even know if it exists anymore. Like, I just, the answer is so funny. And Dumbledore gives Harry a little wink, which is even cuter. Like, this whole scene is adorable.
Yes, and I love how that is shared, because we know a little bit about that room from the first book with the Mirror of Erised, mm-hmm. right? So we know something of that room, and here's even a further description, maybe a little reminder of that room. It's again one of those things that we're dropped a hint now that will come into play, like, oh, I don't know, a buck and a half away. And so it'll be great to see that. And then mm-hmm. I love that he does that. And I love that Dumbledore in the book has such a great sense of humor. It's like your grandpa.
Yes.
I just get this, like, he's the fun grandpa who's just teasing everyone, trying to keep the peace, you know. But you also don't want to cross him.
No. No, you don't.
So
just this moment there, and the fact that, you know, he can tell that Harry's kind of listening in and gives him a little wink, you know. This is the thing where I think the books do a better job than the movie of developing that relationship, that there's something special about Harry with, you know, Dumbledore, that they have a kind of a special relationship like that. That there is something there that isn't there with all of the other students because of the unique position that Harry is in so many of these situations. And so I think she just does a great job of every once in a while doing a scene like this that kind of reminds you that that's there, you know. And you also, you know, Dumbledore could be really upset with Harry, but he's not, you know. Like, I think he obviously realizes Harry didn't have anything to do with the position that Harry's in this book with the Triwizarding Tournament and everything. So there's no animosity there.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those indications that Dumbledore knows more than what he's sharing mm-hmm. with Harry, you know, kind of like every other book that we've had. He kind of has some idea what's happening and just hasn't chosen to share it yet. I feel like this, again, is one of those situations where maybe he knows a little bit more about what's going on, and maybe, or he's putting the pieces together, or he at least, I think we get the very distinct impression at this point mm-hmm. that he just very much believes Harry in what's happened, and that, you know, he would have to be crazy to have put his own name in the Goblet of Fire. So, you know, I think this is maybe just, it's good for Harry's, I want to say it's good for Harry's soul to have this interaction. You know, it's probably one of the first times he's interacted with Dumbledore since that night. So it's kind of nice to have that feeling that, like, okay, so I didn't piss off Dumbledore, or if I did, he's over it now. We're just having a good night. We're going to move on. So, all in all, I think dinner was really cute, and I like that we get Hagrid too, and you see him with Madame Maxime, and the whole night's just like this nice little private dinner, or a nice little, you know, fun dinner, and then you lead into the festivities part, which kind of reminds me more of a homecoming. And, you know, the kids start dancing, and even the teachers start dancing,
yep.
and
the weird sisters are playing. They're
yeah,
weird.
One of the teachers is dancing with Ludo Bagman, and, you know, Percy's like, how inappropriate. He's a government official. And you're like, oh my God, Percy, get the stick out of your butt. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, that's when we learn about, we already talked a little bit about, but we learn about how Crumb and Hermione came to be, and, you know, Harry and Ron just get super miserable. You know, Harry's watching Cho and Cedric and is like, ugh, and, you know, Ron is just super mad at Hermione for whatever reason. He claims she's fraternizing with the enemy, and, you know, maybe, you know, he's only using you for information on Harry, which of course Hermione takes offense to. And, you know, I love that Ron starts calling Victor Vicky. And the Patil twins basically up and abandon Harry and Ron and are like, hey, if you're not going to come have a good time, we'll go have a good time ourselves. So, you know, it's somewhat similar to the movie. You know, a lot of that kind of falls into the same category. And you just have this sort of like, I don't know, like cat fight.
Yes.
Like it's just a little cat fight. Like they're not actually fighting. You know, they've just said some things that are hurtful. They're just reacting emotionally. And that's the end of it. And everyone's like, this is just not a good night.
And to top it all off, after the fight with Hermione, then Percy comes over and it's like, well, it's good to see Hermione getting along with Crumb. It's all about international magical cooperation. And it's the last thing that Ron wants
to
hear.
That's the last thing Ron wants to hear in this case, because that was her argument, too. It just solidified that. And he has no idea. And Ron's just like, shut up, Percy.
Well, and then there's this quick little scene where Ludo Bagman had been dancing with McGonagall. And as you know, that breaks up. Fred and George kind of accost him, it says, you know, and Percy's like, oh, they no respect, you know, and he's like, I'm so sorry, Mr. Bagman, I hope they weren't really bothering you, and he's like, oh, no, 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 they just wanted to, you know, get some business advice, you know, and so just one more thing that Fred and George have been doing, which is, you know, it's, they've had a really interesting, like, storyline, because there's this, they keep having these little things that they're doing, and they're just inserted into these chapters, and I'm wondering where it's all building to, because she doesn't do anything, you know, haphazardly. So it's definitely going somewhere. So all we know so far is that they've been very secretive. They keep wanting to talk to Bagman after the Quidditch World Cup. And so should be very interesting to see what happens with this. So...
And then the really big and most important part of this chapter is as the night is wrapping up and Harry's kind of starting to call it a night, and a lot of students are, you know, he sees Cedric and Cho heading back to their respective houses. And, you know, Cedric stops and comes back to Harry and is like, you know, in fair trade, you warned me of the dragons. I might recommend that you take a moment, spend some time with your egg. Take a bath, maybe? Relax? In fact, let me give you an exact location, password, and place to take your egg. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know. And at first, Harry's like totally not getting it. He's like, why would I do that? And then I think he finally goes, okay, I probably should listen to what's happening here, but I still have no idea what's going on. So at this point, all we know is that he should take his egg to the prefix bathroom, use the password, what was it, Pinewood? To get in.
Mm-hmm. Like Pine Fresh or Pine Wood or something like that.
Pine something.
Yeah.
it's Pinerific. It's a Pinerific bath that we're about to have here, guys. So we'll see. I think that's where we'll start off in the next chapter.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
And there are two other really interesting things that happen. Ron and Harry go for a walk before all this. And.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You get Severus and Karkaroff are talking, and Severus is talking about how something is getting clearer and clearer for months, and shouldn't they be concerned? And, you know, Snape is like, hey, I'm staying here at Hogwarts. I don't know what the deal is. And so the boys have no idea what to make of this whole thing. And they're pretty much just trying to stay out of the way. You know, kids are making out in the, you know, bushes and stuff and getting in trouble with Snape, and they're trying to get away from all this, and they run into another conversation they shouldn't overhear, which is Hagrid talking to Madame Maxime and confessing that he's part giant and assuming that she is too, and she gets very, let's just say, not happy with the assumption that she might be any part giant.
She's very offended.
Very offended.
Which is so interesting. Because you get this idea, and we'll learn a little bit more about that as the series progresses. I don't know that we delve too much more into this in this book in particular. I can't remember, but we definitely learn more about yet another group of magical beings, right? So we know about the centaurs, we know about the house elves and kind of how they're all treated, and now we're introduced to kind of another one, which are giants, that they're a thing in the magical world, and clearly they are not a popular or well-received thing.
Mm-mm. Well, and Ron, this is one of those moments where he remembers that Harry doesn't understand these things, and so he starts to explain how you know, giants are not looked well upon, and mainly that's because it's they have a good reputation, a lot like trolls, which are, they just seem to like killing people. And so, nobody really wants them around. And the reason that
nobody
most
wants to be associated with them. Yeah.
So it's no wonder that Hagrid doesn't really share that, and why, you know, Madame Maxime would be so offended about this idea. And so I think, you know, it adds two really interesting conversations here. Till, of course, you know, Harry's finally making his way back up to the room after Cedric pulls him aside, and he gets into the common room, where it is an all out yelling match between Ron and Hermione, and her telling him, you know, you know, if you don't want me going with somebody else, you should just ask, you know, me yourself. And he's like, well, that misses the point entirely. And I love how Harry doesn't say anything, because he likes having his best friend back. But he's like, he's pretty sure that somehow Hermione got the point much better than Ron did. And that is hysterical. Like, mm-hmm. Harry is just so funny. He's so funny. Especially when he's just kind of in his own little mind, not saying anything. And it also shows how smart he is.
Yeah.
To not say stuff. Like, he realizes when to talk a lot of times and when not to talk.
Unless he's, like, enraged himself.
Yes.
When he's emotional.
That
it does
true.
All that,
this
all
is
that
very
logic
true.
Goes out the window. But I think my favorite, and maybe you've already said a favorite part in this chapter, but I'm going to recant and say my favorite part in this chapter is the fact that the fat lady in the portrait is drunk.
Yes, that is awesome.
I don't know why, but that, like, random little touch just makes the chapter for me. Just makes the chapter.
Hey, you know, it means that the portraits like to party too. So, and the fact that they can't party is pretty funny.
I know, right?
Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem too bad to be a portrait. So,
that would be a portrait.
Well, really eventful chapter.
Yeah, full chapter.
Very full. And so much happened in it. And it was, I mean, it's just a lot of fun. And what I love about it too is that we're really getting into the nitty gritty of this book. I feel like, you know, like, we're really starting to get down to some, you know, brass tacks, as they say. And so I love, you know, we get the next chapter, Rita Skeeter's Scoop, chapter 24. But until we get there, where can everybody find you, Dre, if they want to talk to you about this chapter or any other Harry Potter things? Or, which, by the way, I got to mention, Target has a ton of new Harry Potter stuff.
I know!
And I just got a Ravenclaw sweatshirt! Yes!
Ah!
So I'm so excited.
Yeah, Rob.
So, yes. Gotta get your stuff.
My cousin was in town over the 4th of July weekend. And last weekend or the weekend before, I don't remember. Some weekend recently.
There was a weekend.
There was a weekend involved, people. It's just so exciting. And she got our little one a little Harry Potter, a little Gryffindor t-shirt that is, like, going to be perfect for our Thanksgiving this year. And I'm just so excited, but I'm keeping myself from going back.
Oh, my gosh. They have a ton of stuff in the kids department. They're bringing back a lot of Harry Potter Legos. And obviously it's because, you know, of what's coming out this year. We've got Fantastic Beasts 2 coming back. And so everything Harry Potter comes back. But yes, there's a ton of great stuff. And they even have it for adults, women and men. So, you know, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you've been looking for some stuff, Target is the place to go. But, Drea, before that, if anybody wants to talk
before
to
you go to Target,
before
guys.
You go to Target, guys, and Target
or
is not a sponsor of this show.
Lines.
That's an unsponsored plug. Where can everybody find you?
You're welcome, Target. So you can find me on Twitter at Facebook.
You can find me on Twitter, Facebook.
By going to the Facebooks and the Instagrams. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN. And I know we had someone on Twitter share a find that they were wanting to donate to us for a giveaway, so stay tuned for details on that. in the upcoming podcast. We haven't actually figured them out yet, but we will, and we will let you know.
Well, and you can find me at Target. I'm going to be over.
You can find Matt at Target.
Yeah, that's right. Also, I might be tweeting things from Target over on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'll probably be taking photos on Instagram at MattRushing02. You can also find me here in the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking all about Star Wars as we recording this. We got big news. The Clone Wars are coming back. So hello there. You can also find me on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones over on the Orb. I can be found on the General Geek Show over there, the 602 Club, as we talk about all the fandoms that we love. We don't just keep it to one, and we are very excited to be talking about Fantastic Beasts 2 this year. So, And then, last but not least, you can find me on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, talking about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.